Blog Talk Radio.
Happy, happy days, Beatle fans, as our virus now is coming to a close and our lockdown and our mask wearing. And I hope you're all getting vaccinated. And if you're not, you know, that's your privilege not to, but it's good to start to feel the freedom again of being able to go out and get and do things. But in the meantime, we're still doing our shows and we will continue doing our shows. So when you got a moment, sit down, sit back and listen. This week's guest is Pearl Cowley of New York. And she saw the Beatles twice at Shea Stadium. And she also at one point had a very close encounter with John and Paul. So let's get her on here. Hello, Pearl. How are you?
Hi. How are you, Jen?
Good. Now,
nice
you sign you sign off your emails Pearly. Do you like to be called Pearly or Pearl?
Yeah, Pearl is fine. Pearl is fine.
Okay. And let's just kind of dig right in here. You got in contact with me when you heard about, you know, Marianne Laffin's story and the fact that you're one of that group, the Gate Stadium. Which I'm sure
yeah, I call
after.
Them, huh? Yeah, I call them New York Apple Scruffs is what I call our little group that used to gather because we were really pretty much like the kids in Apple who used to hang out there, you know, in London.
Yeah, sure seems like a very dedicated bunch. And, I think after all these shows start to air and everything with all these people who met at Gate B, I think Gate B is going to become rather crowded. I'm afraid. You know,
yeah,
I
really don't remember the gate.
Everybody,
that,
she said it was Gate B for Beatles. So
yeah, that makes sense, definitely.
Yeah, so that's how. Yeah, for those of us who are getting older and the memory's going, that's you know. So learn, you know, remember by association, B for Beatles. It was Gate B. So how old were you in 1964 when the Beatles, you know, were on Ed Sullivan?
I was 12. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I was 12 when they appeared on Ed Sullivan. And it's like a night I'll never forget. You know, that's embedded in me forever.
Yeah, did you have a family that watched Ed Sullivan every week?
Yes. Yeah, we watched it every week. And that particular night, I was very excited because I knew they were going to be on and I'd already heard, their arrival over the radio and on the television news.
Mm-hmm.
And, when the show was about to go on, I was like sitting directly in front of the screen.
For mom and dad saying, you're going to hurt your eyes.
Famous last words,
parents. You're going to hurt you. Move back. All through the, that's my memory, all through the 70s is in TV. You're going to hurt your eyes. So did you have siblings at the time?
No, I was an only child.
Okay,
yeah.
So there wasn't the older sister who was going crazy.
No, it was actually my mother and my grandmother was watching, and I believe my two aunts may have been watching with me.
Mm.
Yeah,
girls' night.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How did they react? Do you remember?
I wasn't completely conscious of them. I was
what
so
mean, did they talk about their long
the
hair?
Screen.
Oh, they need. Did they say? Oh, they need
all
hair.
All I remember is them saying, "Look at her."
Oh, okay. So they were caught. So they just thought you were being funny.
I was very excited. Yeah.
I didn't know if they were the long. You know. Oh, they need haircuts. Oh, you know. this noise, listen to that noise, you know.
No, okay, I didn't get any of that. No, no, I had a very supporting, my mother loved the Beatles, my grandmother loved the Beatles.
Oh, how great is that?
There was a generation gap and all that, but regarding the Beatles, there was agreement. They were impressed. And the reason for that is my mother was very into classical music and the arts in general. So as mm-hmm. a result, she appreciated them. She could see what they had.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my dad and I only ever agreed on one group in our lifetime, besides 50s music. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, you know, when it was current, whatever was current at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid, it was ABBA. That was it. ABBA was about the only group we could ever agree on in the 70s. So my mom, forget it. She didn't agree on anything. So
no, ABBA's not in the same category. Sorry.
No, there is no. The Beatles are their own category. We can't even put anybody close to them. So, mm-hmm, but just the analogy of knowing how it feels when you're, well, you said yours was very supportive, but you know, as I said, my parents just didn't agree with the music.
Yeah, I know that a lot of parents were, yeah, totally against them. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you're 12 then, and you know, did you even consider, you know, going to see them, or did the topic ever come up that first year in 64?
Oh, yeah. Right after I saw them, it was like my life just changed. It's like a light went off in my head, and, you know, they became the center of my universe at that time. And I wanted to see them. I wanted to touch them. You know, it became a life ambition.
Mhm. Yeah. Now, did you have a lot of friends? Did you have a lot of friends at the time who were also Beatles fans that you could?
Oh yeah. I mean, at school, like the very next day, it was total madness. That's, you know, everything. It's the only topic that day. I went to a Catholic school.
Okay. And, yeah, I was about to ask that. Was it co-ed?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was in the sense, at that point, I was in seventh grade, and I'm trying to remember. It was co-ed, but there was a girl's school and a boy's school. So that we were divided. So there would be like a sixth grade girls class and a sixth grade boy class.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 1965 rolls around. Now, how did you get tickets to the Shea?
To the show at Shea? I had my mom order them.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when they arrived, it was very exciting. She only paid like $5.75 or something like that. I still have the ticket stubs. you know, it's funny because I've seen Paul McCartney for over $300 several times. And when you think I saw four Beatles for under $6.
Yeah.
You know, and at that time it was probably considered expensive, you know.
Oh yeah, I know a couple people that I've interviewed have talked about the expensive $5 ticket and what they had to go through just to raise $5 so that they could give their parents the money to get them the ticket. Now, who went with you? Who did you go with to the show?
Next door neighbor who was like a best friend of mine at that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you all dolled up?
I don't remember. I doubt it. I had really lousy seats. I was sitting at the very top. I mean, like, you know, in the nosebleed section. Yeah.
And that wasn't, at the time, though, it wasn't like you could really, I mean, you could change, you know, obviously pick the price of the ticket, but when you were sending away for them, you kind of got what you got. In the mail,
yeah, you
right?
got what you got. I mean, there was no guarantee where you were going to sit. You know, you just wanted to be in there anyway. You know, mm-hmm. back then the whole thing was I want to be breathing the same air as them. You know, it was that kind of feeling. So
right.
you didn't even Yeah, I mean, but once I was up there, I was like crying because I wanted to. I bought these little. They were selling these binoculars that didn't do anything. You know, so I remember I was crying because I said, "Oh God, I could see them." You know, they were, but they were really basically four dots at that point.
Yeah, and I can't imagine the audio and.
That was part of the excitement. I mean, just hearing the constant, you know, the constant din of screaming was, and that just chills, you know. It was amazing. And then, you know, you would see people running, you know, getting past police and trying to get to them.
Yeah, I interviewed, it's coming up, that'll be airing, of someone who actually ran onto the field. And so there, her story's coming up on her journey halfway to the Beatles.
And you would be rooting for these people to get there, and because they all represented, you know. So
yeah,
anyone would represent to touch them. So yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's so interesting to hear those stories, because, you know, I always wondered what would happen if everybody, once one person went, so many people went that it just flooded the there was no way the cops that were there could stop that many people. I mean, that would have been my thought. Oh, look, they're going after her. Now's my chance, you know.
That's true, but it wasn't easy to climb over the. I mean, there were obstacles. They were on second base. It was not easy to get to them.
Oh, I'm
you know,
sure.
There were too many obstacles.
Yeah,
I mean, and I was all the way on the top. So,
yeah,
you know, by the time, and the shows were pretty short. I mean, they only lasted like 20, 25 minutes.
Can you imagine going to a concert and paying good money and having a 25-minute show? Listening to 25 minutes,
oh,
you know?
God,
So you didn't feel the need to dress up? Because I know that a lot of people, you know, and it was funny because someone just posted a copy of a comic strip online about, you know, every girl thought that, you know, one of the Beatles was going to spy her in the audience and, you know, just whisk her off her feet. So everybody got dressed up and had their hair done. But I guess you knew you were up top and...
No, I didn't know where I was. I had no idea. I had no idea where I would be. It's just I don't remember what I wore, so that's why I'm not telling you. I don't remember if I got dressed. That's not something I...
Right, right,
You know.
It wasn't that... I guess it
14,
wasn't that important.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's the people who took pictures and everything, but, okay. So, next year rolls around, and again, you get to, you know, did you your mom send away for the tickets
again? Okay, well, that time my mother went with me, you know, and I had better seats.
Okay.
The yellow seats that time. It's still not down, you know, by the dugout or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know about that, frankly. But anyway, I went with my mom. I actually had a better time with her.
Oh, really?
It was just great. It was very emotional. Both nights were very emotional.
Were you a screamer?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So what happens when your mother's with you and you're screaming? Does she encourage this, or do you not scream?
I'm not conscious of her. I don't care what she's thinking. Yeah. Yeah. I was pretty rebellious. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I guess I also, your mom enjoyed it?
Yeah, she loved it. She absolutely loved them. She went with me to see A Hard Day's Night. She took me to the first time to A Hard Day's Night.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I made her, and everybody was screaming in the auditorium, and I made her stay through a second viewing.
Wow. So, well, that's
and
a, she
said,
that,
no.
That's,
she was saying no. Yeah.
That's a supportive mother.
Yeah.
Did you, did your, you know, did, I guess, Were you at a theater where there was screaming going on when it was, you know, when they when A Hard Day's Night was on the screen in the theater?
Yeah.
So it was it was mayhem there too, huh?
Yes, and they had just played Forest Hills. I didn't get to go to that one. And this was, this theater was around the corner from them, from Forest Hills. And they had just played like maybe a few nights. I don't know, a few nights earlier. And I remember talking to someone saying that they could hear the screaming all the way to where this movie theater was. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But
wow.
I didn't, I didn't go to that one. Yeah.
So
I wasn't allowed.
So it was like a whole Beatles week in Forest Hills with the, you know, with the movie and the concert. And
I imagine it was. I didn't live in Forest Hills. I lived in Elmhurst at that point, New York.
Okay.
Which is near Shea Stadium, actually. Yeah.
Okay. So at some point during all this, you end up involved with the group that Marianne Laffin talked about, the one that
The way that that developed was in 1967, the Beatles had already stopped touring. And everyone, you know, people like me, were kind of jonesing for them. And so I decided to go to the hotel where the Monkees were staying at, which it was the same hotel where the Beatles had stayed the previous year. And there were a lot of people there. And in my mind, I'm comparing, let's say, are there as many people for the Monkees as there were for the Beatles? Because I was always like, every success of the Beatles I felt was my own for some reason. You know, like every number one, like I was always rooting for them to hit number one, you know, instantly, you know, it was always my, you know, I was always very conscious of the top 40, et cetera. So,
yeah, did you have, were your bedroom walls plastered in pictures and posters?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So it was go to sleep with them, wake up with them 24/7.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, so I went there with two friends and I was standing on a corner and I just started this conversation with this girl whom I did not know. And I told her, you know, I'm really here for the Beatles because, you know, the Monkees are here and they shouldn't be here, you know.
Right. This was a protest. Just to clarify, this was a protest that the Monkees were staying in the hotel.
Right. On my part. Right.
And, right, and there was others there, more than you. There were people gathered
there. So,
just to protest the fact that the Monkees, how dare they stay in the same hotel that the Beatles stayed in. They're in the wrong turf. We're talking Sharks and Jets here, you know.
Right. Right. So I so this girl said, you know, there's a bunch of people here who feel the same as you do. And so she introduced me to this was in front of the CBS building, I believe that's the building that's there. Yeah. And or maybe it's ABC. Holy cow. All right. Well, in any case, so I met some people and then we started like coming every day. And the same people would show up and we kind of all decided to plan this thing called the Beatle Rally, you know? And so we said, hey, let's meet in Central Park. And we walked over to Central Park, I think, the first time. And then we said, hey, let's keep meeting. And that was by a tree. There was a specific tree. And we kept saying, okay, you know, we would be by the Warwick, and they'd say, oh, let's go to Central Park, we'll go by the tree, and people would laugh, like, what tree? There's like a million trees in Central Park, you know? But we knew which tree, okay? So I do remember Sgt. Pepper came out that summer, and it was, you know, it was an amazing feeling in the air. A summer of love was happening. And then Brian Epstein died, and we all had like a little, we had a moment of silence around that tree in Central Park.
Do you remember about how many of you there were? I mean, was it more than 20 or less or?
Oh, man. I guess there was a core group of around 50 people, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so anytime anything Beatle-ish or Beatle-related would happen, we were like a grapevine to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we call each other up, say, Paul's in town or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we just leave whatever, drop whatever we were doing and go.
Well, wasn't it nice to be a teenager, you know, when you could do that? Just drop, you know, summertime, drop what you're doing and just go figure out where Paul's headed or John or whatever. So continue on.
Right. So the major time that happened, the most important, you know, call that we got, I was with my girlfriend Janice at the point, and I think she was in my house that day, and we got a call and said, you know, Paul and John are coming, and I don't remember the exact details of that, but we ended up going to Manhattan in front of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, this would have been when they were announcing Apple, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's why they came, to promote
mm-hmm.
Apple on the
mm-hmm.
on the Tonight Show, right? So we're standing around in front of the hotel, and this regular taxi cab pulls up, and out come John and Paul. And, you know, we're like, what? You know, and it's like John runs past us. He's wearing a white suit.
Mm-hmm.
He runs past us, and Paul, we held back. Somehow he's more amenable. He was more amenable that
mm-hmm.
way. And we held him back. And I remember I'm to his left side, and we're all surrounding him, and I'm rubbing his arm because I'm in total disbelief that I'm actually
touching
this man who a year ago I was up in nosebleed seats, you know,
mm-hmm.
and never thought I would get this close.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember there was this one guy who used to hang around with us. His name was Tommy, and he was laughing at me. He said, "You look like you were looking at God," you know. So I remember he was making fun of me, but he was the same way, you know, because he was
mm-hmm.
a big, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was the first, yeah.
Yeah, so I just interviewed someone last week,
mm-hmm.
and she was there at this moment, the same moment when they.
Linda?
And she actually, I think it was.
Linda Woods? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, were you friends with her?
Yeah. Yeah, we met.
At the time?
During that period of time. I don't remember exactly how I met her, but we have a vague memory of Linda Eastman hanging out there.
Yeah,
I remember this woman saying, like, grow up, you know?
Uh-huh.
She's very bitchy, and I said, God,
I don't know that Linda had gotten, that Linda quite understood, because she was very fan-friendly later on when Wings, when she was kind of forced into the situation.
She was a groupie, and she, you know, she got through by using a camera, you know.
Right.
Using
so I don't think she
the guise of a photographer. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think she quite understood what she was saying, and I believe she probably I would like to believe that she would look back on that and thought, you know, I should have been a little kinder to the fans at that moment.
She wasn't even with Paul then. I believe she'd already met him and all that, and that's why she was there. But
so they weren't dating at the time or anything?
No, he was still with Jane at that point.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I never liked Linda. Yeah, just for the record. I, all this Oh, this talk about, oh, Linda was the greatest. I mean, let me tell you, all those years the fans would go to the concerts and this woman could not play an instrument or sing or anything, and she was put up on stage and she was hated at this point.
And
people then did this complete turnaround because she passed. And I feel, and I've always felt bad for Paul, you know, because he clearly came to love her. She was the mother of his kids, but I never really liked her as a person. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Something I don't know that I really got to know her. I think one of the things that made people become Linda fans after her death was Heather. You know, when you kind of compared the two, you kind of said, you know, well, compared.
Oh,
to
Heather, you mean Heather Mills?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about her daughter, because she had a daughter named Heather.
No, not her daughter, Heather. No, I'm talking about his second wife. So everybody, you know, when you had to compare the two, you kind of went with the Linda. You became a Linda fan at that point. But because as I said, you know, Linda, now back to Linda Woods, you know, she talks about, or I can't remember her other name, Linda Ranky Woods. Is that what she goes by? Anyway, she you know, she was talking about a headlock.
Woody. That
she put Paul in a headlock at the time and kissed him. And I don't know if you.
That I don't know. I don't. I was conscious only of myself. I have no idea.
I guess you do all kind of put on blinders and you have no idea what's going on because you have this moment that you're ready to capture. Just capture the moment, you know. And I know that other people have talked about that, where literally you just stare into the face and you sit there and you think, absorb every detail at this moment because it's about to go away.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So where was John had run off?
He went right through the revolving doors into the hotel. Like, I'll never forget that. Paul was kind of left behind, but he was held back. And I mean, I remember, I wanted to get close to John at that point, but I really later. I got to touch him, but it wasn't as close as, or as long, because I was surrounded by a lot more people at that moment. So it was one of those things that was in a crowd, and I grabbed his hand, I put my hand into his.
When was that? Because, you know.
Okay, that was a few days later. That was a few days later when he moved to, when they both went to stay at Nat Weiss's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
On the Upper East Side, and I had a whole other thing that happened there. I don't know if you want to hear about that.
Tell it. Tell the story. Absolutely.
Okay. So this, who was it? Malcolm Evans came out of a car, and I'd been on amongst the big crowd of about 1,000 people at this point. And this is in front of Nat Weiss's apartment. I decided to write Paul a letter. All right, so I don't know where I got a pen, whatever. I wrote him this letter, and I was wearing these love beads. They were very long, and I wrapped them around the letter. Oh, actually, I broke them in half, okay? And I tied them up, and I gave him half, and I kept the other half, all right? And I wrote my phone number on that on that letter and all that stuff, yeah.
Hey, you get one opportunity. you take it to the limit, you know?
Right. So Malcolm Evans came out of a car, and I asked him, Mal, could you please give this to Paul? And I was with my best friend, Janice. And he said, sure, love, you know, with that accent. And right there, right. You want to die just from that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so that was that. And he went upstairs, and I have no idea what happened to my beads at this point. This is actually the day they were leaving New York.
Okay.
And I, you know, the crowd began to surge forward as they came out.
Mm-hmm.
And Janice, my friend, claims that she saw Paul wearing the beads. And I couldn't be sure because I couldn't really see him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I myself did not, you know, the crowd was so crazy.
Right. Where are all the photographers at this moment? You know, you'd think somebody would have snapped the picture.
I know. Okay. So then, I'm kind of surging forth, and that's when I got closer to, John, and I just slipped my hand into his at that moment. And, you know, they kind of ran past. So I was able to touch him in that way. So I still remember that.
So please tell me he at least squeezed it a little.
No, he didn't. I wish he had. No.
Aw. No. Just acknowledge you a little bit. Just give a little squeeze or something. But I guess, you know, his thought is,
no,
get me through this crack.
Like no, yeah, there was no eye contact or anything. This was like a hand that grabbed his, and he had no idea whose hand it was, you know. So then they got into the limousine, and this time they used the limousine. And I remember it was you got chills this time because they had a police escort as they were leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And the siren, you know, they blared their siren. So that was, like, very emotional. It was like, you know, it's the Beatles, you know. So, I mean, I still, you know, it's amazing. Everything that I went through at that time, I can still relive. You know, it's amazing. And, okay. So I actually, about 4 years ago, somebody posted a picture of Paul and John in the limousine at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul is holding up my beads and has the letter in his hand. So I'm going to find that and I'm going to send it to you. Okay. Now, I don't know who took that picture. I have no idea. And I wasn't even sure at first if it was, but then I asked around, and that's the clothes Paul was wearing that day, because that I don't remember. You know,
wow.
I remember he was wearing, when he first arrived at the Ritz-Carlton, he was wearing this green jacket. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And you've probably seen that green jacket in pictures. It has patches. So that's
mm-hmm.
when I was touching his arm, his shoulder, his hand, that's what he was wearing. And the thing about that jacket is that one of the girls in the group had her aunt sew her an exact replica of that jacket overnight. Okay.
Wow.
And yeah. Yeah, and I wasn't there for this, but I was told that he saw it, and, you know, these girls were there, like, maybe 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever. I had already left, and he was turning her around thinking that was his jacket. Yeah, so she had a really good close encounter because, I mean, wow, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that was that time. Okay, so that was 19, and this is right before my 17th birthday.
What year was this?
This was May 1968, when all
mm-hmm.
this happened when they came to promote Apple. There were many other adventures, too, you know, that we had chasing them around while they were in town, but these are the highlights for me.
These are the ones where you got in real close.
Right, yeah. And then the following year, mm-hmm. in March, he had just married Linda, and
mm-hmm.
He came to New York with Linda and Heather, Linda's
mm-hmm.
daughter, right. And yeah, and I took, I was able to take a couple of photos of him there. And I actually did speak to him, and you know, it's like you're confronted with this person and you don't know what to say. So I said, "Where's George?" You know, and he said, he looked me right in the eye, and he said, "I don't know, love." I said, "Oh my God." And yeah, and it was just, you know, I believe at that time I called my girlfriend to tell her, and for some reason she didn't know what I was talking about, and this is a Beatle fan too, and she was like, she hung up on me because I'm screaming. I said, "I said to him again, he talked to me," you know, that kind of thing. She hung up on me because she was some crazy person. And she was supposed to know automatically. It was really shocking. Her reaction was shocking to me. So
wow,
she hasn't lived that one down with me. But yeah. Yeah, so that's the... yeah, and I know that a lot of people got a lot of photos at that time. You know, when he married Linda, and he was here, and he was standing on the corner, and
I know there's stories of people going to his apartment where he and Linda were, quote, honeymooning,
right.
Which I'm sure wasn't much of a honeymoon, but you know,
right? Well, they'd already had a honeymoon, right? You
know, right?
So,
well, yeah, the honeymoon.
I mean, in a sense, yeah. So, we just hang out there all the time. And by the way, I was at that point, the first time I was in school and I just cut class. Second time I was working, didn't go to work, you know. So that's, you know, that's how you get to see a Beatle, you know.
Right, right. There seemed to be a lot of school skipping, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, around the Beatles. I don't, you know, unless I guess you were a Grateful Dead fan, you know, who used to also follow them around, there really hasn't been, you know, fans who would do this, who were, you know, so many fans that were doing this.
Yeah, so if you think about it, when they first arrived, you know, when they first arrived in 1964, there were 10,000 kids at the airport. So if you think about that, they were all supposed to be in school at that point because it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So, I mean, I happened to be home that day because we were given off because it was, I'm talking about February 7th, 1964. We were given the afternoon off because it was the Monsignor's birthday or something like that. And so, you know, I was like, I had like 3 radios on at home. You know, it was so exciting. So that I would say that's when the mania began for me. That day, the excitement of their arrival. You know, I didn't even know why I was excited. I was just, you know, I just went crazy without knowing why at that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of theories on why all those girls were going crazy. Anyway, you know, Pearl, it was so nice to talk to you and so great to hear your stories. And, you know,
it's been great talking to you.
Yeah, I envy you and being able to, you know, have those kind of memories and do you have grandchildren?
No, I have children, but I don't have grandchildren.
But still, I'm sure your children. Were your children amazed, or are they amazed by these stories?
Yeah, they are. They think I'm totally crazy. But my son is a punk, and he can take me. He's a punk musician. He's a teacher also. And Ashley's Beatles are the Killers. I don't know if you know that band, but that's, you know, she's, so I understand loving an artist.
Right.
You know,
right.
At that level. Even though she calls me a stalker, she would never do that. Yeah, she said we were all stalkers, but that's what people did back then.
I think nowadays you probably would be called a stalker.
Yeah, you are, because it's a whole different world. So, yeah.
Right, right. Well, I there just wasn't, I don't think there was fans like that, you know, prior that were, I mean, maybe there were people following, you know, following Elvis and Frank Sinatra around, you know, but,
sure,
you know.
Sure, there were, no doubt. Yeah. But not like
I don't think, yeah, nothing yeah. like what the what was going on with the Beatles. Anyway, it was so nice to talk to you, Pearl, and I'm so happy that we got to hear your stories, and hopefully everybody out there is has a smile on their face reliving these experiences with you. Anyway, thank you, and thank
you,
Beatles
great.
Fans,
thank you.
For tuning in for another show, and come back next week for another episode of I Saw the Beatles.